Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
720 WGN, I'm John Landecker. I think the Tim Samuelson, who's on the phone right now, who's the self-proclaimed history nerd and Chicago's first and only cultural historian, might be able to identify what I just played. Did you hear it, Tim?
I did, but I'm trying to make out what it was. It sounded familiar. Clue me in.
Mr. Magoo!
Oh, Mr. Magoo. Okay. In fact, Mr. Magoo, I remember badgering my mother to go see a Mr. Magoo cartoon at the old Garrick Theater in 1960. So, you know, I should know that voice. Good old Jim Backus.
Where was that theater?
That was where around where the Goodman Theater was on Randolph Street. And between Dearborn and Clark, and it was an old Louis Sullivan Theater. And I remember going down to see that. And, yeah, those old Mr. Magoo cartoons are pretty great stuff.
The Cultural Center has an exhibit that has to do with the history of cartoons, comics, if you will. Chicago, where comics came to life, 1880 to 1960.
Yep.
Tell us about the exhibit. I mean, there's one over at the Contemporary Museum of Art that everybody's, that the newspapers are giving a lot of publicity to, but this starts way before the one at the Contemporary Art Museum starts. This, as I said, starts in 1880. What kind of comics are we looking at that long ago?
Well, you never hear about comics going back to 1880, and these are some of its ancestors. And there's a man, talk about kind of a quiz game. There's a man named William Schmidtgren. Now, if you never heard of that or don't recognize that name, don't feel bad. Almost nobody knows it. But he was an artist who worked for a newspaper called the Chicago Daily Mail in the 1880s, later went to work for the Chicago Daily News, and he developed a way of quickly sketching on specially treated metal plates that would allow fast and easy reproduction of line drawings in the newspaper. So these were used as before the days of photography. This was a way that you could get an artist to draw up a scene in the news very quickly, get it in print for the next edition. But Schmidtgen then trained a whole team of artists who were to do this. And they started using this technology to write fictional stories that were serialized in the newspaper and then were illustrated by a cartoonist. And Chicago built a really impressive stable of cartoonists, probably one of the most famous who actually continued drawing into the 1940s was John T. McCutcheon, who was a long time with the Chicago Tribune. But now, even others who did early comic strips, like T.E. Powers, he was an alumni of the Chicago newspapers. Harry Hirschfeld, these were all some of the founding fathers of the modern comic strip. So we can take credit for it. The first color Sunday special supplement to a newspaper in color, that was Chicago, 1893. The Chicago Inter-Ocean published
it.
Special supplement that had cartoon comics in it that you followed panel by panel following a story, 1893. So this is comics in its infancy. Other papers caught on, the Hearst papers and, you know, later in the 1890s. But we can say kind of that we got the ball rolling here.
Wow. I understand over at the Tribune the comics are taking a buyout, but that maybe is just a rumor.
Well, yeah, something like that. We'll see. Yeah, you see if Dick Tracy can get a good deal on this thing. He can solve that mystery.
Yeah, good luck, Dick Tracy. Nice answer. Way to go, Tim. That's good. That's very good. So, were these originally, going back that far, were these political political statement types of cartoons, comics, or were they fantasy characters? Were they, you know, little animals? What was their general content at that time?
It was a little bit of everything. In those early days, cartoonists would be called on to make satirical political cartoons.
Right.
You know, were commenting. But a lot of the artists were doing things like illustrating stories. Like, for example, the writer George Ade wrote these wonderful stories describing in detail parts of the city that people normally didn't write about out in the neighborhoods. And John T. McCutcheon would then make multiple illustrations that would show and illustrate the things that Ade was writing about. In fact, often McCutcheon went with Ade and sketched on the site.
Wow.
Sometimes they would do a feature where it was divided into panels, and there was a story that went panel to panel. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was a joke. Sometimes it was a commentary, and so that's very much part of this early days of Chicago cartooning. Then you started getting the newspaper Sunday supplements that were done in other cities.
Yep.
Comics and the comic strip, as the comic strip evolved, that many people say that the first comic strip that's in a long horizontal strip was pioneered by Claire Briggs, who was a Chicago cartoonist, who was very prolific in the first decade of the 20th century, and was a very well-known cartoonist at the time. But the part when we have the name of our show, Bringing Comics to Life, part of it was Chicago developed drawings and cartoonists who were able to portray people as that you could relate to as real people. They weren't just a foil for reciting a joke, but they had personalities that anyone picking up the paper could recognize themselves or their father or their uncle or their boss in the cartoons that they read. And then a big breakthrough came in the second decade of the 20th century in the Chicago Tribune. And this is when the paper was taken over by a combination of Colonel Robert R. McCormick Joseph Medill Patterson.
Yep.
Now, you often hear about Colonel McCormick, you know, one of the great legends, and people love to tell stories about Colonel McCormick. But they don't talk that much about Patterson, who had an interesting background with strong socialist leanings, being very part of a very populist kind of background. And he took a personal interest in developing the comic page and actually kind of being the mentor to shape what went in the comics pages and to make it that the comics weren't just a long strip that was telling a joke, but to tell ongoing stories, and ongoing stories of real life. And so under Joseph Medill Patterson, he was kind of goading the cartoonists to develop their characters, bring families into it, bring babies into it, things that people could relate to. I mean, one of the cartoons that's featured in our show is Gasoline Alley by Frank King.
I remember Gasoline Alley. I've seen some of those, yeah.
Oh, sure. I loved that comic. You know, it's still going, actually. And
right.
But Frank King, he started out about these guys who hung out in the garage tinkering with their automobiles, which was a new hobby in the around the time of World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And then it spun off on its own comic strip, and then Captain Patterson keeps going to Frank King, bring a baby into the strip. So then the baby is left on the character's doorstep. And then over the years, it goes from a baby in a basket, and that child grows up through the years. And
wow.
So you see that child get older.
Amazing.
You see him grow up. You see that child. And it's partially based on Frank King's own child.
Yeah.
And then you finally see him get to the point of World War II, And the kid named Skeezix goes into the service in the war, and you follow him, you know, and what's going to happen to him during the war.
Right, right.
So the characters get older. The script is actually still going.
Man.
Now, Skeezix, who was on that doorstep in 1921, that makes him 100 years old.
And he's doing very well for 100 years old.
I would say so. Yeah. And the man who, you know, whose doorstep he was left on, he's got to be, 130 at least?
Time stands still in the comics. We're talking to Tim Samuelson, Chicago cultural historian, who obviously knows his stuff. The exhibit at the Cultural Center of Chicago, where comics came to life 1880 to 1960, and we'll do more on that. Tim Samuelson is with us on the phone. And there was something that you mentioned earlier, Tim, that I've been thinking about, really fascinated. You were talking about the very, very early days of newspapers featuring drawings of actual events. They weren't able to have, you know, photos, but they would make sketches of what kind of events would they sketch, just out of curiosity. Are we talking like news events or sporting events or what?
Actually, again, a little bit of everything, but part of what they prided themselves on was covering news events, and so there were a whole staff of artists who were employed by the papers, and they would often go to the site of, say, a fire or a sporting event or a political rally, and they would make sketches on the spot.
Wow.
And then they would come and they would rush into the newspaper.
Yeah.
And in the early days, they had this process where they scratched on a specially coated metal plate that was then used to make a printing plate that could be produced quickly. Years before, illustrations were made by things like hand-engraved woodcuts, which take a long time. You're sure not going to get a news story out that way.
Right.
But when you could suddenly sketch on a plate, and then, not long after, there was a photographic process where an artist could draw in ink on a piece of paper, and through a photo process, it could make the plates to print drawings.
Even
the famous Adolf Lutgart, you know, the famous murderer who ground his wife up into sausage, you know, they covered the...
Oh, my God!
You never heard about that guy?
No!
Oh, yeah, it was... stopped eating sausage and, Well, actually, he ground his wife up in a sausage machine. He didn't really sell the sausages. But anyway, they put pictures of him, what his wife looked like. You know, they actually found his wife's wedding ring in the sausage vat. There was a drawing of that in the newspaper. So this is the kind of tasks that you would be assigned to draw.
Wow.
And so here was this whole stable of really talented artists who could draw quickly, current events.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, beginning of the 20th century, photography and the ability to translate photographs into printing plates puts those guys out of business in a way.
But, you know, it also reminded me
of them make the transition to making comic strips.
It reminded me a bit of courtroom artists where they don't allow cameras or the court cases where they don't allow a camera or a still camera or a TV camera, and you have that artist sketching what is going on in the courtroom, and then that appears in the newspaper. What is the 1960 is where this exhibit wraps up. What are the latter comics that we're talking about, say 1955 to 1960?
Well, actually, some of those are the later years of some of the classic comics that really hit their stride. One of them that I think many comics historians would say really were a comic that was existing for a long time, but really the artist really kind of got into the real art of it, is Chester Gould and Dick Tracy.
Oh, yeah.
and you know, amazing storyteller. He had an art style that, as it was evolved, it became something almost like something out of a film noir movie.
Yeah.
And in fact,
yeah,
he did film noir before there was film noir, with big bold black, instead of shading things in with fussy lines, big swaths of
yeah.
black that would attract your eye. And then he would make up, you know, these fantastic villain characters.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Dick Tracy looked kind of strange enough with his perfectly square chin and his, you know, very geometric nose and whatnot. But,
right.
But he looked perfectly normal when you had people like Prune Face and Flat Top and BB Eyes. And there was Mumbles. And there was Mumbles. Who,
I remember Mumbles.
There was the balloon. There was just a little zigzag line,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
Except his partners in crime knew what he was saying, and they'd say, "Oh, what's that you say, Mumbles?" in a little
yeah.
squiggly line. And but Gould was great with that sort of stuff.
When is the exhibit open at the Cultural Center? What are the hours?
These days we are open from 10 o'clock until 4 o'clock every day. We're closed on holidays.
Mm-hmm.
But also, one thing that we warn everybody, we've packed a lot of stuff into this show.
I'll
There's
bet.
A lot of text and a lot of information. And so we've had people actually joke saying it would take them 2 days to read their way through the whole exhibit. So my wife went to check it out, and she only got halfway through. She has to come back.
Well, that sounds like a good testimonial to me, Tim. Thanks for being with us. It's Tim Samuelson, the cultural historian from the Chicago Cultural Center, talking about a great exhibit, Chicago, Where Comics Come to Life, 1880 to 1960. Thanks so much for being with us, and I don't think I'm going to have any sausage tonight. But maybe, you know what? Maybe that's just me.